In an election that will determine the fate of the entire universe, there's only one podcast holding politicians accountable. Scott Morrison, Anthony Albanese. Who will lose? Find out on The Chaser Report, Election Edition.
Hello and welcome to the election edition of the Chaser Report for Wednesday, the 27th of April. We've got Dom Knight, Charles Firth and Craig Rucastle again today. And Charles, we're number one.
That's right. The trending hashtag around Twitter this morning is come to number one.
C-U-M.
C-U-M.
So this is the Cole Makes You Come song that you made. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is now number one, isn't it? It's
number one on the iTunes charts, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm glad. Just to not mislead people, it's not this podcast, so don't fear. Don't worry. Don't fear.
Yeah, no, we're not Hamish and Andy, yeah. Although we are doing better than their election podcast.
So, yeah, no, it's a remarkable achievement. It shows you either how amazing our musical abilities are or just how incredibly shithouse the Australian music industry is.
Yeah, how cum sells.
We have reached out to the Wiggles. To do a cover of our Cole Makes You Come
song
so that we can get it in the Triple J Hottest 100. We think that's probably the best way.
Good approach, yes.
To win
yes.
the Triple J Hottest 100.
That's a great idea. And I've reached out to some Liberal Party staffers to do a song called Cole Makes Me Come on Desks. which I think will go very, very well.
That's probably what the Liberal Party have been assuming that the song is about.
Yeah, that's right. I'll put a desk in the video clip very prominently.
I hear that it's actually the reason it got to number one was that it's just on repeat in the Parliamentary House prayer room.
On today's show, we have Tony Burke, opposition industrial relations spokesman. I'm going to ask him if he gave Albo COVID. I'm a bit suspicious about that.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to you about net zero and about the climate, which has finally been mentioned in this campaign, of course, with lots of lies.
And we're going to check out the PM's captain's pick in Warringah, which, let's just say, hasn't been going incredibly smoothly with Catherine Deaves. But first, let's catch up with Charles's daily campaign update.
We begin today with the solemn news that the Coalition is at war with itself. While Morrison was in Queensland yesterday launching hydrogen hubs as the key to his commitment to net zero, one of the national candidates there was out and about declaring the target dead. Colin Boyce pointed out the wording of the agreement Morrison brokered with the Nats last year had left enough wiggle room to make the commitment completely meaningless. Isn't it nice when someone says out loud the thing that everyone's thinking? To make matters worse, National Senator Matt Canavan then said the government's plan for hydrogen hubs should be scrapped in favour of building more coal plants.
If net zero is alive and kicking, show me where countries are doing that.
But it's not just the Nationals who are breaking ranks over climate. The Liberal candidate for the seat of Melbourne says teaching children there's a climate emergency is nothing short of child abuse.
But to teach children that there is an emergency is nothing short of almost abuse.
Speaking at a candidates' forum, her reasoning was that whenever we teach kids about what's happening to the climate, they get stressed.
Have 8-year-old children who are stressed.
Better to keep kids in the dark so they don't take the government to court to argue that the Environment Minister has a duty of care to young people, hey? Meanwhile, nine newspapers, chaired by ex-Liberal Treasurer Peter Costello, have the amazing scoop today that the Labor campaign is prioritising Anthony Albanese in its media appearances over failed former leader Bill Shorten. What a scoop! Insiders at the newspapers say tomorrow they've got an even bigger scoop that milk is white. And finally, there are growing concerns that the so-called teal independent candidates are causing headaches for the Liberal Party. Apparently, Liberal voters who care about climate change are beginning to suspect that their local Liberal candidates can't deliver on the climate promises they've made. I wonder where they could possibly have got that idea from. That's the election wrap for Wednesday, the 27th of April. We'll be back in a sec.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
The Chaser Report.
There've been a lot of articles in the lead up to this week saying that climate change had not been mentioned at all in the campaign. I think
Labor wanted it that way, didn't they?
Exactly. Yeah. Which I was frustrated about. Obviously, it's something I care about. But it's back. This election is now about a carbon tax again. Yay!
Yeah, this is the carbon tax, isn't it? That Peter Credlin actually admitted was never a carbon tax.
Well, this is a new one. So let me explain to you. This new carbon tax, okay?
Okay.
So the Liberal Party is saying the Labor Party has a carbon tax.
Right.
And I'll explain to you how this happens, right? So there's this thing called the Safeguards Mechanism. Sounds boring, right? Mm. Is boring.
Yeah.
Put in place by the Liberal Party, by Tony Abbott.
Right.
Labor Party.
That well-known radical.
Yes, Tony. Radical climate change campaigner. I think you saw him at a recent Extinction Rebellion.
He does hold a hose, though.
Yeah, exactly. The Labor Party was so scared of this area that they've just copied the Liberal Party's policy.
Mm.
But this is the thing they're going to do, is they're going to actually slightly enforce it.
So this is how
it works. Let me explain it using the metaphor of a flatmate, right?
Right. Mm, yeah.
So you got a flatmate who, for some unknown reason, often shits in your apartment, right? And you come up with an agreement with him and you say, look, I know you've been shitting in our apartment a lot. Mm. What about if we agree and we both sit down and agree that you'll only do it twice a week? You'll only shit in this apartment twice a week. Because, I understand we can't radically change your approach to shitting overnight.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. But if you go above that two shits, we'll pay you. You know, you might need to pay for some cleaning up, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's the safeguards mechanism. Mm. Basically, companies agree we won't pollute more than this amount.
Yes.
The way it's currently operating is this. So let's go back to our apartment room.
Yep.
Just say that our shitter shits in the place five times a week, right?
Yes.
The way it currently operates is
just to interrupt you there, where does he shit the other 2 days? Like,
look, occasionally he uses the bathroom for some unknown reason.
Oh, he goes to the bathroom. Okay,
yeah. I don't know.
Okay. Or just eats white bread.
Exactly.
Okay.
So he shits five times this week, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And you say, look, we made an agreement that you would only shit 2 times. And he goes, yeah, but I shat 5 times. Mm. So what you do is you change the agreement so it says you're allowed to shit 5 times so that you don't have to charge him anything. That's the way it currently works.
Right.
So if you pollute and then you go, we said we're going to pollute this much.
Yes.
But then we pollute a bit more. They go, oh, it's okay. We'll just change the paperwork so that you can pollute more.
Whoa.
So all that's going to happen is it's just going to be that you cannot necessarily always just do more shits in the apartment. Sometimes you'll have to pay for them.
Right.
Mm.
Yes.
You can see that that's a carbon tax.
There's no intervening step between that?
So literally by saying that occasionally we will actually make, say for instance, a coal company pay for their pollution that they've already promised not to create.
Yes.
That is what the Liberal Party is saying is a carbon tax, right? Now, let me distinguish between a carbon tax and a normal tax, okay? If we take $180 million of actual taxpayer money, right?
Yeah.
And we give it to, for instance, put in infrastructure for gas companies in Northern Territory. We actually pay actual taxpayers' money, $180 million to them, right? That's not in any way a tax. Right? No, that's not a tax. That's just normality.
That's an investment.
That's an investment. That's normality.
Yeah.
Giving a large amount of taxpayers' money to gas companies and coal companies, that's just normality, okay? Yep. You just got to establish that, right?
That's just like shitting in an apartment.
It's just like shitting in an apartment. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's right. But if you do this, right? So if you say, coal company, we're going to actually charge you for your pollution, and so they kind of go, well, we're going to pass that on in some way to somewhere, to some person will have to pay something. That's a carbon tax, okay?
Mm. Right.
So if you have to pay millions and millions of dollars directly to a gas company, that doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter.
You charge them 1 cent to fuck up the world, that is an outrage that should be stopped in
every way. So hang on, so you're saying that Labor's policy is to have consequences when people fuck up, I can see why the government's against it.
Exactly. Mm. This is, I mean, it is radical in many ways. It's actually the most radical Labor Party policy they've had, actually. I can see why they're attacking this.
Yes.
But so, for instance, but the thing is
I mean, does this mean that it's all over Red Rover? Queensland's not going to vote Labor and we're going to have coalition?
I mean, I'm
ready to call the election.
Yeah. When Craig said carbon tax, I filled out a postal for the coalition and set it off.
Like, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
just those 2 words.
I mean, they've set it up. They've set it up brilliantly because basically what they've set it up is that any change to their current approach is a carbon tax. So, for instance, the current policy of the government is that when you meet with a coal or gas executive, you have to give them a head job, right? Mm. But if you change that in any way, if you just say, no, we're not going to give you a head job anymore, and then they're required to go out and pay for their own head job, that puts up the cost base of coal.
Yes.
That is a carbon tax being passed on. Thousands of people are going to lose jobs.
I'm not sure if it's easier or harder to understand when it's shits and head jobs.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Election news you can't trust. The Chaser Report.
Joining us now is the Labor member for Watson in southwestern Sydney and the shadow spokesman for industrial relations, Tony Burke. Hi, Tony.
G'day, John.
So, Tony, before we ask you about, you know, actual policies or whatever, do you know how Albo's going? Like, how is he going?
Oh, his symptoms are nowhere near as bad as what I had. So he's still been doing radio interviews, whereas I actually lost my voice for about 8 days.
When did you have it?
I missed budget reply. So I was at the budget speech and the next day I was out and I was out for, about 3 weeks.
I just assumed you were taking a small target strategy to your budget reply.
And dodging the thing altogether.
You got it the same day I did, Tony. And I was looking at the calendar and just trying to work out, no recriminations if so, but did you give Albo COVID?
No, not possible. No, there was too big a gap.
Do you think that Scott Morrison gave Albo...
At the debate.
At the debate.
Yeah.
It was brave of him to get into a room of...
What, you mean he was carrying a vial or something?
I mean, to be honest, getting into a room of Sky News watchers, you're probably going to get COVID, aren't you?
The miracle was that he hadn't had it already. Like, it was extraordinary that Anthony had gone so long. And if you're going to get it during a campaign, it probably couldn't have been at a better time and, did well in the debate. He'd had a good week in the second week. And so if you had to pick which of the 3 weeks where it was going to hit, probably as good as it could have got.
It's a little bit like saying if you've got to lose an arm, make it the one you don't write with. But he has been doing the Joe Biden in the basement doing the crosses. It's probably easier. You'll have more energy for the rest of the campaign.
Oh, no. I reckon when he comes out of the blocks, he'll be at quite a pace.
The reason we wanted to chat to you today, though, Tony, is you went on radio last week and we're talking about how basically the Liberal Party has promised to cut wages in the next term of Parliament. Now, I was not aware of this at all. What are you talking about? What is all this about?
Okay, so the government made an announcement, it was sort of over that Easter period, that they were going to bring back a piece of legislation known as the Omnibus Bill. Now, the main part of the debate about that legislation was what it allowed was for enterprise agreements to happen where the base rate of pay, so your official hourly rate, can't shift, but every penalty rate, overtime rate, shift allowance can be negotiated down to zero.
Yeah, right. Which is the whole thing that they did a few years ago. Remember when they cut all the penalty rates? And basically everyone I know ended up with a wage cut, but
that's
sort of done so sneakily, like because it wasn't about the base rate of pay. Like somehow they managed to get away with it.
Yeah, so Well, yeah, they got away with it because we didn't win the next election. That was how that happened. We had votes in the parliament that we kept losing by just one vote to try to stop those pay cuts. But this time they've announced it as an election announcement that they're bringing back that bill. Now, what they then tried to do just before the debate is to say, oh, yeah, we're introducing the bill, but, yeah, not the bit that affects wages. And there's wage cuts all through the bill. So, you know, so Mr. Scott Morrison says, oh, look, we're not going to change much. And then his minister says, oh, we're not going to change any of those bits. But if they're introducing the legislation, that's what the ledge does. That's what it does. There are other bits that cut wages in different ways. So there's a really creative section that hasn't had as much publicity as it should, that allows you to trade wages for non-monetary benefits.
Bartering. Well, you can barter with your employer.
So at the end of your shift, you get given a hamburger.
Yes.
You get your meal deal, and yes, that can knock off an hour's pay. Oh. If you get a staff discount card, then they can presume that you do all your shopping through their store, and therefore that can be another reason for a pay cut.
Well, here at the Chaser, we pay our interns in shiny beads. So, you know, that's something.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask for a chemical test of them.
But, Tony, you say that, and you seem to be suggesting that the voters of Australia should worry about this becoming law if the coalition's elected. But isn't the fact that Scott Morrison's announced that he's going to do it, doesn't that guarantee that it's very unlikely to actually happen in the next term of the parliament?
Well, here's the thing. He's announced that he will, and then he said, oh, maybe he won't. Mm. And then his minister said no, and then he refused to repeat. So he can go in any direction now, and he still gets to fail to deliver.
That's right, exactly. But so, in the interest of balance, though, I should try and you know, put some tough questions to you, Tony, which is, what is wrong with cutting people's wages?
I think the best test goes back to what you said before when the penalty rates were cut, because when those penalty rates were cut, we were told, oh, but it was going to create jobs. And that was the reason. And then the Small Business Council ended up admitting, once all the cuts were through, when they were asked, did it create any jobs? They acknowledged it hadn't. Hadn't created a single job. All it had done was reduce the cost on employers. And, of course, the other thing it had done had reduced people's income. And that's bad enough at the best of times. But at a time when inflation's running so hard, you'll hear Mr. Morrison or Scott Morrison or whatever we want to call him, talk a lot about the economy. You'll never hear him talk about the household economy.
You say this, but I'm an arts worker. I don't have any wages to lose. I'm not worried about this at all.
Hey, yeah, because you're also shadow arts minister, aren't you? You're the spokesman.
Yeah, yeah.
You go to a lot of gigs I see on your Instagram. Yeah. How do you find them?
Oh, they're coming back now, and the crowds are showing up. Now, one of the problems during the pandemic, and I raised this when they were doing their support, was they didn't provide support to make sure we didn't lose venues. And when you lose venues of a particular size, people don't just lose the local place they might have gone to watch shows. It also means if you're an artist trying to do a tour around the country, there's particular size venues that you need to match to be able to get the tour to work. So we've lost some of our fundamental infrastructure. So what's out there now and starting again, you'll see big crowds. But from the perspective of an arts worker, there's still fewer gigs than there were because we lost some venues on the way through.
Well, our venue, Giant Dwarf, had to close, and I've got to say that's really helped the overtime bill.
So before you go, I'd just like to get your tip on the election. At the moment, I think Labor's a little bit ahead on the sports bet and things like that, but where would you put it, the smart money, Labor or Liberal?
Okay, well, first of all, the betting markets are the wrong place to look at all, because last time they paid out on a Labor win before the election and not exactly how it transpired.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't go near the betting markets. So what's happening on the ground at the moment is there is a mood for change. Yeah, you see that reflected in the different data that's out there. But when you're talking to people, the sense that is out there really strongly that I'm getting from people is that last time when they voted for Scott Morrison, they didn't know who he was. Mm. Now they've seen a sense where at the big moments, he's gone missing, whether it's been bushfires, floods, ordering vaccines, ordering rapid antigen tests. When they've really needed their, he's gone missing. Mm. And when he's reappeared, he's found someone else to blame and said it wasn't his job anyway. Now,
so what you're saying is you want to vote for a change candidate, so Clive Palmer's in. Is that what you're saying?
One more question about jobs, Tony, before you go. If Labor wins the election, can you commit to DJ Albo hanging up the headphones?
Oh, wow. I don't think we can. I don't think we can.
I think it would be a very popular policy, Tony.
Unlike the bloke who's currently in charge, Anthony only knows how to be Anthony.
Will we see a stadium
going
tour?
In and masquerading in different jobs, I don't think it's likely to happen. So they might be rare, but I reckon the headphones will still be about.
All right. Thanks very much, Tony Burke.
Thanks, Reeve. See ya.
See ya.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Rigging elections since before it was cool. The Chaser Report.
Craig and Charles, when I hear the words captain's pick, I start to get a bit upset because it reminds me of school sport when I was always picked last. What do those words mean to you in politics, the idea of a captain's pick?
I also get upset with that because I remember Charles saying, Dom has to be on the chaser.
Yeah, captain's picks never go well, do they? But what I'm reminded of is when Tony Abbott gave Prince Philip, yes, a knighthood.
Knighthood.
He said, oh, well, that was a captain's
pick. That's right. Yes. So it's actually an act of political self-immolation, isn't it? Scott Morrison seems to be doing much the same thing with his captain picks at this election. We talked about this on the podcast before, but in New South Wales, they've needed to use captain picks because they had a huge problem with the Liberal pre-selections in New South Wales. Strangely enough, they just couldn't organise them in time. Do you recall why that was, Charles?
Well, wasn't it because Alex Hawke never turned up to the meeting? Because Alex Hawke was basically Scott Morrison's, representative. And they didn't agree with any of the picks that the local Liberal parties had made.
So there was a crisis because the PM's guy didn't turn up to the meeting, requiring the PM to just impose whoever he wanted, right?
Yes. It's a real flaw in the way they set that up, isn't it?
And they need to get this right. This is really important for Scott Morrison because one big problem they have is the seat of Warringah. That was Tony Abbott's old seat. And they were looking for a great candidate to try and win it back from Zali Steggall. You know, they asked Mike Baird, who lives there. They asked Gladys Berejiklian. Both of them went, fuck no, we make much money in the corporate world. So they needed to find somebody to do it. And the thing is, well, Zali's, you know, she's one on climate change. She's an inner city progressive type. They needed someone to fit that mold. What they found was Catherine Deaves, who basically, as far as I can tell, was an internet troll in search of a new bridge, basically. Her big issue, the one thing she cares about and has been campaigning about for several years is trans women competing against cis women. And she's been trying to promote those arguments through the most sensible way of getting social change, which is complaining on social media and trolling.
That's right, because she said the trans activists were Nazis.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh. And so on one day in September last year.
You always know when an internet discussion's going well when somebody mentions Nazis.
Yeah, so. It's good to know that she did year 7 debating to link everything to Nazism.
So on one day in September last year, the Herald looked into this. She sent about a dozen tweets criticising trans female athletes. Mm. And one of them was, gender identity is a toxic religion without a God that comes for our children and infects our society. So she sent that tweet and then the same day sent in her Liberal Party application. So well, she wasn't even a member of the party.
That was Liberal Party application, John. Yeah, right. You understand that tweet is the way you apply for
it's
a
pledge
party
of
role.
Allegiance.
Yeah, exactly. So she set herself up as the J.K. Rowling of Collaroy. And the stupidest thing she said, I think, possibly the most offensive, is that there's a link between trans women and serial killers. And to me, all that says is that she's watched The Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, but again, just that's the chosen. That's the normality. Mm. Again, so it's the change of one trans person doing it that suddenly
changed. Right, okay, yeah.
So conservatism is leaving it so that only mass murders are done by white men.
It's the exception that proves the rule.
Exactly.
Yes.
So also on her social media feed, among many other random posts, she posted about how sad it was that the wonderful Julia Gillard was hounded out of office. It just makes you think, did the PM do any background checks at all on Catherine Deaves?
Didn't she also make derogatory comments about the Prime Minister as well?
Well, that was his own cabinet.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
As a new candidate in Warringah, she doesn't know anyone there. She's really got to hit the pavement and press the flesh. But instead, in this campaign, she is in hiding, and she went on SBS News this week and made this claim about why she's in hiding.
I have received death threats. I have had to have the police and the AFP involved. My safety has been threatened.
So this goes beyond politics, right? This is shocking.
No one should be making death threats in an election, people.
No one should. We should never have death threats, which is why it's so good that New South Wales Police came out and said to The Guardian they're not aware of any death threats against Catherine Deaves. So wasn't that a relief?
It sounds a bit like when Pauline Hanson was like, if you're watching this, I'm dead now. Like, no one was actually killing her.
And the PM's come out and said, look, this woman can't be cancelled. We're not letting her talk to the media at all. That she didn't even tell them about the SBS interview. Mm. She just went and did it.
But what about all the billboards? I went up the Northern Beaches the other day. There's a whole lot of billboards floating around doing the Catherine Deaves line on trans women.
Oh, but is that the
Advance Australia? Yeah, I think it's Advance Australia. Yeah. So there's a whole lot of billboards where they go, I want to be able to compete against women or some trans person. Mm. And then they've got a picture of Zali Steggall in black and white, so you can tell that Zali Steggall must be there.
Yeah, yeah.
Saying that's transphobic.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. It is an interesting approach because there's a lot of. I was in a room the other day with people who all thought this was a brilliant act of four-dimensional chess by Scott Morrison.
Yeah, it's genius.
I mean, firstly, I think that the approach is going, we're not going to win Warringah back. So we're not going to win Warringah, so we can just throw somebody in there that can kind of we'll lose that election, but can talk to certain prejudices in the rest of the community.
You get the North Queensland vote.
You get the vote from people. I mean, it's a huge. You actually look if you break down Australia and look at it. There's like 49% males, and then there are 51% of the rest of the people are women going for Olympic positions.
yes,
it's a very big part of the electorate, so they really care about this issue.
It's funny you mentioned this kind of conspiracy theory that this is actually about other seats other than Warringah, because SBS News' Janice Pearson put this to Catherine Deaves.
There's a suggestion that you're running to simply help the Liberal Party gain seats in conservative regional and rural areas, that you don't really have a chance of winning Warringah. You've had some of your own party members criticise your points of view. Do you have any concerns that you're being played at the highest level?
If there are other mechanisms at play, I'm not aware of them.
Yeah, it checks out. She's not aware of what's going on. But the strange thing is there's a poll out today that says because of Deaves' remarks, the Coalition's going to lose Wentworth and Parramatta, as well as having zero chance in Warringah. But there's an even broader poll that's out that from Redbridge. It's in news.com.au today. And it's found that when political candidates attack trans women, gays and lesbians, they lose twice as many voters as they gain.
Yes.
And that only 2% of voters care about the issue of trans women in sport.
This is the thing, isn't it? Because I think the Liberal Party thought that they were on to a winner with banning gay marriage. And then they massively lost the plebiscite that they themselves set up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I kind of think this might be the same sort of genius 4D stress chess that's going on.
I think it's like, you know, we all make the mistake of ending up in some kind of, you know, Facebook tunnel of people. But unfortunately, there seems to be a lot of people who are like, they think all of the posts on Facebook about this issue represent the majority of the population, when they don't at all.
Mm. I was talking to a Labor Party pollster the other day about transphobia, because there's a sort of suggestion that in certain communities you can sort of run non-English speaking campaigns that run sexual panic through sort of conservative church-based communities and stuff. And he reckoned that across a whole seat you can probably move about 50 votes based on transphobia.
50 votes.
Okay. He said, the reason why candidates lose when transphobia comes up is because they're shit candidates. Nothing to do with the transphobia.
Yeah. Well, if we see the Liberals winning by 50 votes, we'll know it was a brilliant piece of four-dimensional chess.
Our gears from Road Microphones are part of the Acast Creator Network. Catch you tomorrow.